Asia Pacific currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Link. Good morning and welcome to another episode of Asia Pacific Currents here on Community Radio 3CR. I'm Giselle Hannah.
And I'm James Barry.
And we're taking you through to 9:30 this morning. Of course, Asia Pacific Currents is brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. You can find us on the web, all the www.aawl.org.au. We are on Facebook and Substack, so look us up on those social media platforms. In the second part of the show, we are going to speak with our favourite resident commentator on all things imperialism, war and anti-war. This week, we're going to be focusing on the escalation of hostilities with Iran. Our guest is Jacob Grech, and he's an organiser in AAWL, but most of you will know him probably from his show A Friday Rave here at 3CR and just generally from around the movement. But of course, we're going to go first up, we're going to head straight to news from around the region.
So in the Marshall Islands, they've launched the universal basic income. The Marshall Islands, with US military support or through US military support, has become the first country in the world to introduce universal basic income as part of efforts to limit immigration. Universal basic income is a regular unconditional payment provided by the government to every citizen, regardless of income, employment status or wealth. The program, which is expected to cost $30 billion annually, is covered not by Marshallese taxpayers, but by a trust fund set up under a military agreement with the United States. This military agreement provides the United States with complete access to the territory of Marshall Islands. The Marshall Islands government have declared their country to be at the center of what they call a real-time global policy experiment. The payments amount to around about $200 per quarter, which acts as a subsidy on top of existing wages. The average wage in the Marshall Islands is about $1,500 a month. The payments are open to all 43 citizens of the Marshall Islands, including small children, so regardless of age or employment, and so far more than three quarters of Marshallese have registered since the program was introduced in November.
And moving to South Korea on Tuesday, South Korea's Ministry of Employment and Labour finalised additional regulations and interpretation guidelines for the Yellow Envelope Law, a new labour law aimed at strengthening the bargaining rights of subcontract workers due to come into force on the 10th of March. The final amendment set bargaining standards between principal contractors and subcontractors and clarified the rules the Labour Commission can apply when dividing or merging bargaining units. Importantly, the criteria for determining employer status has been clarified to remove previous ambiguities over the extent of the responsibility of principal contractors, a major cause of dispute in the past. The government also widened the standards that determine employer status, defining a party as an employer if it substantively and structurally controls and determines the workers' conditions. This change occurred after some concerns among the labour movement that the original wording of the law could allow for loopholes that some categories of employers could use to avoid being legally responsible for the conditions of their workers.
In India, on Monday, the Indian Overseas Bank Officers Association will take strike action as part of nationwide agitation against coercive surveillance measures and workplace practices imposed by management. Backing the move, the All India Bank Officers Confederation said the developments signal a serious and alarming shift in workplace culture, saying that workers are being subjected to forced overtime, unilateral end-of-day restrictions, and other steps that undermine dignity and professional autonomy. The dispute emerged alongside strong financial performance by the lender in the December quarter, including a sharp rise in net profit and improved assets, which reflected the strong work of the company's employees. The workers who are taking strike action are demanding the restoration of sensible working hours, for transparent governance, adequate recruitment, and an end to arbitrary leave denial and penalties.
On Wednesday, the Prime Minister of Singapore agreed to incorporate into the 2026 budget three priorities raised by the National Trade Union Council relating to AI and the workforce. Earlier in the week, the Secretary-General of the NTUC had called on the government to seriously consider how to manage a labour market with AI slowly encroaching on jobs, particularly entry-level jobs made available to graduates. The NTUC outlined a three-point approach aimed at making every worker AI-ready, providing support for workers made vulnerable because of AI, and strengthening the labour movement's ability to protect and uplift the workforce. The NTUC added that a national approach to AI was needed now to avoid serious problems in the near future. The union said Singapore faces a specific challenge by having, on the one hand, one of the best education systems in the world, while, on the other, being a major hub for AI in Asia. The government has responded positively to the union's approach, mainly because it fears a brain drain if graduates didn't see a clear path to employment.
On Monday, Israel's defense minister signed an order banning five Palestinian online media platforms that report on events in Jerusalem. The International Federation of Journalists and its affiliate, the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate, issued a statement rejecting this order, condemning the Israeli government's attempt to control the narrative and curtail media freedom. The media bans are part of an intensified crackdown against Palestinian journalists during the month of Ramadan. The Palestinian Journalist Syndicate has documented the issuance of exclusion orders by Israeli authorities against at least 10 local journalists and photographers, preventing them from entering the Al-Aqsa compound in the Old City of Jerusalem. This is part of a wider crackdown on Palestinians travelling to the Old City during the fasting month. In recent years, police have attacked Palestinians gathering at the Damascus Gate after evening prayers during Ramadan. The Palestinian Journalist Syndicate expressed its solidarity with those affected and reaffirmed that Palestinian journalists will remain steadfast in uncovering and exposing crimes of the Israeli authorities.
As Nepal is due to go to an election next Thursday, polls have shown indifference from Nepalese youth. Nepal's youth unemployment rate is 20.6%, the highest among all South and Southeast Asian nations, which underscores the failure of successive governments to solve a job crisis. At least 3 million of Nepal's 30 million people currently work overseas, mainly in the Middle East. Nepal's trade union federation, the Rashtriya Shramik Mahasangh Nepal, estimates that 1,500 young Nepalese leave the country every week for employment abroad. The RSMN added that the youth unemployment rate is double the national rate and that more than 80% of young Nepalese are engaged in the informal economy to earn money. It was this situation that's led to large-scale protests across the country last September, which were labelled the Gen Z protests by the international media. Recruitment agents have said that the number of young migrants has grown since the protests because of political inaction, a lack of employment, and low wages. And that brings us to the end of news from around the region. We're going to go do some community announcements, and then we'll be joined by Jacob Greck for our feature interview for the morning.
WorkCover system is broken. Delays, denials, and profit-driven decisions are hurting real people, physically, mentally, and financially. Add your support to the call for change by the Injured Workers Support Team. Visit the Parliament of Victoria website, find the Legislative Reform for Workers' Compensation System e-petition, and add your name. Stand with the IWST and injured workers. Demand a system that is centred on recovery, dignity and safety. Sign the petition today. IWST is a 3CR supporter.
The state Labor government has begun works on demolishing Melbourne's 44 public housing towers to be replaced with private housing. Already hundreds of residents have been displaced, often into unsuitable homes under duress.
The towers on Racecourse Road, Flemington, have become Homes Victoria work sites, while the families still living in the buildings are being treated appallingly.
Join Save Public Housing supporters in solidarity with residents.
Weekdays 7:30 till 9 a.m. as we engage with passing traffic to make some noise and show Jacinta Allen
that the demolition of public housing is unacceptable. Signs and banners provided, or bring your own.
There's power in numbers, so see you at 120 Racecourse Road, Flemington, 7:30 till 9 a.m.
Safe Public Housing is a 3CR supporter.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. 3CR is determined to stay independent. This means we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We serve our community, not corporate interests. But this also means we do rely on people like you to keep the station running. From paying the bills to maintaining our studios to training the next generation of community broadcasters, 3CR relies on community donations to survive. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
And I will remind listeners that it is Subscriber Week here at 3CR. If you're not already a subscriber, make sure you do give us a ring or jump online and fill out that subscription form. It's $40 concession, $80 waged. And if you're a band or an organisation, you can subscribe for $150. And if you've got a lot of money and you want to spend it, a $300 solidarity subscription. You're listening to Community Radio 3CR. This is Asia Pacific Currents. Our guest today is Jacob Grech. He's well known amongst the left, but he's a veteran anti-war activist. Yeah, I thought I'd just throw in an insult just for kicks. Good morning, Jacob. How are you?
Oh, the old bones. I just managed to get in here this morning, Giselle. How are you, you young thing?
Very well.
James.
I'm well, thank you.
I've had to finally confront the reality that I'm not a young person anymore because I think I was talking to a comrade and then I said a version of, well, I was this age when that thing happened. And then the person looked at me and went, yeah, that makes you quite old. That's what that does. Not that I'm a young person. Yeah, 46, Jacob. You knew me when I was 19.
Yeah, yeah. And I still hate you. Jeez.
Well, let's talk about something we
so
all
please,
hate.
Listeners, you've just been told not to trust my judgment.
Well, as I said, speaking of things that we all hate, the ever-increasing belligerence of the United States, there has been an escalation of tensions with Iran, more of that belligerent talk from Donald Trump, the repositioning of troops in the vicinity of Iran. What do you want to tell us about this?
Well, first of all, I don't think, you know, I want to make sure that listeners are aware of just how big this is. There's been so much talk about United States militarism all around the world. They're doing this, they're doing this, they're going here, they're coming there, that it's just like, oh yeah, another movement of troops. But this is the largest movement of US troops into the region since the 2003 invasion of Iraq. This is absolutely huge. We've got two carrier strike groups, like you hear about the Gerald Ford and the USSA Blinken are there, but each of those aircraft carriers aren't just the aircraft carrier. They've each got, well, just look at the A Blinken has 8 cruisers, or no, 4 cruisers, 4 submarines, 8 destroyers, and then they've got more planes than you will see landing at Tullamarine at any given bloody hour or so, like a few hundred planes. We're not talking about an aircraft carrier here that has maybe a dozen planes or two ships around it. This is huge. Every one of these carrier strike groups has more firepower than the Australian military. All right, just put it in that context. All right, in terms of firepower, they are nuclear capable, and when we say nuclear capable, we mean nuclear armed, because there's no way in the world the USS Gerald Ford is going to sail all the way across the Atlantic and into the Mediterranean and go up to the Eastern Mediterranean and decide it needs to use weapons and therefore head all the way back to the west coast of the United States. If they're nuclear capable, they are nuclear armed. And so this is just, they're just the carrier strike groups. Then they've got all the air wings who are landing in Bulgaria and landing in, Diego Garcia, Chagos Islands. And it's just an absolute build-up. So what I guess a lot of people aren't aware of is the role Australia plays in all that. And so in order to sort of talk about that, I've got to say, first of all, we have the build-up of US bases in Australia. We know that when the United States went to bomb Africa a couple of years back, they fueled up at Katherine. They stopped at Katherine. We know that when they attacked Iran in July last year, the 12-day war on behalf of Israel, that they were fueled out of Katherine mid-air. The B-52s can be fueled mid-air, which is a technological marvel. But beside that, the planes left from Australia using fuel that the US keeps for Australia. And the US has fuel stores in Australia, particularly for this reason. We know that every one of the submarines relies on Northwest Cape, that's the Harold E. Holt Naval Base, to communicate. And we also know that every piece of targeting information and communications information is going through places like Pine Gap and Kotorima in Western Australia and different places, Shoalwater Bay, all the other DSD facilities dotted around the country. So I guess the point I want to drive home is that Australia is more than implicated. We're involved. Whatever the United States ends up doing in Iran, and judging from the State of the Union address the other night, or the bits of it that I heard, because I only heard the bits relating to the bits I'm interested in, obviously, we all do that, it might happen next week, it might never happen. There's no way of knowing what this United States government is going to do.
Well, let me pick you up on a couple of points there. I mean, it might happen, it might not happen, but clearly the world is careering towards war. The economic crisis, the cost of living crisis, the kind of depletion of global resources, the distribution of global scarce resources, it can be resolved only one way, and that is war.
That is war. And even without the war, I mean, we're talking about a war, an economic war on the people. Their own president said it in 1961, that every warship built is a theft from those who aren't fed and for everyone who needs a hospital and hasn't got one. Eisenhower, that was his valedictory speech. And he warned against the rise of undue influence of the military-industrial conflict. I haven't got the quote right in front of me, but listeners may remember those terms. And what we're seeing, I haven't got the figures in front of me, but I urge listeners, if you've got 10 minutes, look at the Lockheed Martin, the Northrop Grumman, the RX share prices, General Dynamics, before the 7th of October 23, and look at where their share prices surge. And you'll see that every time Trump makes a statement about how we're going to support this or support that, their prices go at least 5-10%. They're worth more than twice as Lockheed Martin share prices are worth twice what they were worth on the 6th of October 2023. That's the war.
There's a lot of discussion going on because while all this build-up is happening, the Iranians and the Americans are supposed to be talking to each other about nuclear disarmament, or I'm not sure what it is that they're both aiming towards. Well, the Iranians wouldn't be aiming towards that, obviously. And that ended yesterday with some sort of very saccharine statement saying that they were sort of coming to an agreement. But from Iranian sources, they tend to say things such as, you don't see a military build-up like that without there going to be a conflict, as in you don't load a gun like that without firing it. What's your take on that sort of view?
Well, I tend to agree that that's the case most of the time, but again, I want to talk about the conflict. If, for example, I come onto you on the street or in your home and I put a gun into your head and forced you to do something, I don't need to pull the trigger to have used that gun, because the gun is the weapon in itself. And the same thing, like, how is Iran in a position of negotiating strength, to however saccharine or sanguine they might be, when they're surrounded by nuclear bombs and missiles aimed towards them? So while it looks normally, the rule is once you build a weapon or you move a weapon, it will be used. Being used doesn't always mean being launched. I'd argue that the war is already happening on Iran just by the fact that it's built up and surrounded by US firepower.
I know that this will always be the direction I go in, and I apologise, because the question for me is always what is to be done. And one of the things that I confront over and over is no amount of alarming information such as that which you've put on the table seems to push anybody in the direction of a global peace movement or a global anti-war movement. And I guess I'm curious, Jacob, what is your view about on the inaction on that question, even at the level of the left?
The left. I don't even know what we mean by the left anymore, mate. There is a left, and there's a social movement left, and there's an economic left. All right, but I would argue that there is no overarching left-wing movement in Australia. And I think that is the case before us. I think, for example, you know, we look at, for example, what's happening with, you know, the not Israel in Gaza, but the response of the movement to Israel in Gaza. It's been, and the union movement. We have nothing. We have the people, for example, talking about boycotts. We have various groups of trade unionists for Palestinians who, by and large, don't really represent any trade union leadership, demanding a general strike without even knowing what's going on inside the union movements, without knowing the laws, But I'll put it to you this, that, you know, in Australia, the top 20 companies of the stock exchange represent 50% of the market actualisation of the Australian dollar. So the top 20 companies at the stock exchange, that's the big banks, the big mining companies, or you know who they are, they represent half the wealth of the Australian, the value of the Australian dollar. And they are all, 19 of them, I think, a majority owned by US hedge funds. So even if we were to convince an Anthony Albanese, even if we had a Whitlam-esque type leader, which Anthony Albanese most assuredly is not, my friends, and he said, okay, we're not supporting the US or Israel's attack on Gaza anymore, all you'd have would be a shift on interest rates, a factory closed down, the media come in and say, look what the Labor Party has done to us, and to be ex-Prime Minister Albanese within 2 months. I mean, he's got Gough Whitlam sitting on his shoulder to remind him of that the whole time. So I think the first thing we need to do, and it's happening in big parts of the movement in Europe, and it's happening in the UK, not so much in the United States, but it's happening in South America, the understanding that the struggle isn't about what God you pray to or what colour your skin is, or how you identify. It's about people with money controlling everything. It's about class. And what we've seen in Australia, unfortunately, is a big part of the so-called left retreating from class at 100 miles an hour, saying that's got nothing to do with it, or it's got very little to do with it. It's more focused on various identity politics.
Or reducing class to an identity as opposed to an understanding of power and how to win. But it's funny, when you were talking about all of the different elements of the left, I thought to myself, yeah, the left would rather eat itself than eat the rich, despite the posters that we make about that.
Absolutely.
It does. I do, in the last couple of minutes that we've got, want to raise, and we won't go into it in any great detail, but again, looking at the belligerence of the US at this moment in time, careering towards war, and just the similarities between this moment and the 1930s, but maybe even 1929.
Just not even I'm that old, mate.
the collapse of the economic system that gave rise to fascism. Mm. And we're seeing One Nation polling pretty highly at the moment, and the polls reflect that the views, the concerns of voters that are going towards One Nation, their concerns are largely economic. Yeah. And the left's impotence in responding.
The average person on the street knows something's wrong. They know it's not working. And as a friend of mine, his name, put it to me recently, he said, so you know, you're a young person, you know something's wrong. So you got two choices. You go to the right-wing dickheads and they say, you're Australian, you need to be proud, you ought to be treated better than that, your government's lying to you, blah, 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 blah. And then you go to the left people and they say, oh, you're a white Australian, you ought to be ashamed even for existing. So-called Australia, so-called this, so-called that, all right? As a young person with very little politics, which side would you be attracted to? That doesn't make them right. That's just saying it seems, you know, we are so far on the back foot. You say the left would rather eat themselves. It's like, and they are, because I think people feel, what's the word, impotent of their ability to make a meaningful change in the dominant paradigm. So they, you know, it reminds me, people, older listeners may remember those stickers, subvert the dominant paradigm. And a friend of mine had one in the back of a car and had dominate the subversive paradigm. And she did it as irony, but it's what's come to life.
It is 28 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. Jacob, thanks so much for your insights, your thoughts, your commentary. I agree, what's needed is a mass international anti-war movement. How to build it is the bigger question.
Just one small held nuclear weapon, my friend.
That brings us to the end of the show. Palestine Remembered is up next. I keep flagging this, and we'll get a date for you really soon and start plugging it a little bit more formally. We are going to have a public meeting about the current situation in Iran. Mostly we're going to look at the people's uprising, and to support listeners and leftists to understand the dynamics there. But of course, this can't be divorced from the global geopolitical environment, which was the discussion we had today. That's it for me, Giselle Hannah.
Me, James Barry.
We're back next Saturday with more news and current affairs from the Asia-Pacific region. Stay tuned now for Palestine Remembered.